From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Playwright Anna Ziegler is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about Photograph 51, her play about the role of Rosalind Franklin in the discovery of the structure of the double helix.
Anna Ziegler is an award-winning playwright whose most recent work is Photograph 51. The play documents Rosalind Franklin's essential role in the discovery of the structure of DNA, which turned out to be a double helix, at King's College in London in the early 1950s. Ziegler received the 2008 Stage International Script Competition Prize for Photograph 51 as the best new play about science and technology. Anna, thank you so much for joining us today. When did you first learn about Rosalind Franklin and her role in the race to decipher the structure of DNA, and how did this knowledge motivate you to write the play?
Well, so I wish I could say that I heard of her when I was in high school, which is, I think, when a lot of people now hear about her. And I actually work at the school that I went to growing up, and I know they now teach her as part of the curriculum in ninth grade bio classes. But I did not, she did not come up, I don't think, back when I was in ninth grade. So I first heard about her when a theater in Maryland called Active Cultures asked me to write a play about her. It was a commission to write a play about three different female scientists, actually. And the only one I'd heard of the three of them was Rachel Carson. And I sort of gamely wrote a draft of this piece. These three women had nothing to do with each other and didn't know each other, and in the case of two of them, weren't alive at the same time. So it was kind of a funny piece. And I realized in researching it and writing it that the story I was most interested in was Franklin's, and so I asked them if I could rewrite the play and focus entirely on her, and they were gracious enough to let me do that.
As you learned more about Franklin, what was it that most impressed you about her?
I think it was her grit and her toughness, and the kind of, I guess, irony or paradox of the fact that to get as far as she did as a successful scientist, she had to be very tough and independent, and at the same time that those same qualities may have thwarted her in the race to DNA, because she was not able to collaborate. She you know, did not end up getting to DNA as fast as Watson and Crick did, who were able to collaborate. So it's that kind of duality that really interested me.
And what kind of books did you read to learn more about her personality and some of the things she experienced at the time she was a working scientist?
I have read now a number of books. I started with Brenda Maddox's really wonderful biography called The Dark Lady of DNA. I read The Double Helix, which by James Watson, which I think paints a very different portrait of her, but one that I also drew from in writing the play. I read another biography of her written by Anne Serre, who I guess was a friend of hers, so that's another perspective. And I guess I read autobiographies by Crick and Wilkins as well, two other scientists who were involved in the race at the time. And there probably are other books that I'm not remembering, but those are the essential ones.
And as you went through these books about her, you mentioned her grit and toughness. What do you remember reading in those books that sort of brought this out to you, that here was a scientist, had these two qualities, living in a very, very competitive scientific world?
As a woman, I found it really interesting that she chose never to marry, maybe never even had a serious romantic relationship. I mean, the fact that she poured herself into her work so completely and then still couldn't capture this prize in some ways struck me as really sad. It spoke to me about, I think, the balance that we all look for in our lives and how how, if ever, to achieve that correct balance, because you certainly can't be guaranteed satisfaction in your work. So did she make the right choices? And I think that those questions, I would probably have very different answers than Rosalind herself would. I don't know that she had many regrets about the way she chose to live her life. So I think it just struck me as interesting as I, you know, figuring out how to live my life.
Well, as you read biographies of her, as many of us in the sciences have, a lot of the people involved in the race for the DNA were not only great and interesting scientists, but a lot of them also characters in many ways. And everyone in your play, I thought, perfectly suited the role of each of these characters. How'd you go about choosing the cast? And can you talk about each of the cast members and what makes them special?
We had a casting director named Kelly Gillespie, who did a really excellent job of bringing in lots of talented people for us to choose from. So we're quite indebted to her. And the casting is done by, it's certainly not just me, I just play a small role. I get to be in the room with the director, in this case with Lindsay Furman, and the artistic director, Billy Carden, and Kelly, the casting director. And it actually was a process that stretched out all summer, in part because it was summer and actors are out of town a fair bit. So we did, I don't know, days and days of auditions and callbacks. And I think we ended up with a really lovely group. And I think, as you said, each person embodied their character very beautifully without trying to imitate who they were in real life. I mean, I think each person made the character their own. I think Kristen Bush, who played Rosalind, just did an excellent job of making this woman, who is in many ways portrayed in the play as quite difficult and prickly, into someone that people still sympathized with and sort of understood what she was, the obstacle she was facing, and kind of, I think, admired her some of the qualities that the men in the play find irritating, that toughness, I guess, that I referenced before. I think Kevin Collins, who played Morris Wilkins, just did a beautiful job of capturing someone who was kind of a member of this old boys club, but was not a cruel person. I think we were lucky that not to have someone who gave Wilkins an edge of cruelty, because I don't think that was part of his character at all, and I think there was much more generosity and kind of miscommunication that went on between he and Rosalind than any kind of maliciousness. So that kind of gentleness that Kevin brought to it was really important, I think, in terms of keeping the story balanced. Haskell King, who played James Watson, brought a really kind of delicious quirkiness to that role, and also, I think, didn't make him the sort of cartoonish villain the way I think he could have done, but I think just showed him in the way that I wanted him to be shown, which was kind of as a very hungry, very ambitious, very intelligent young guy who just knew that this was the right thing to be working on. And Jeremy Webb did an excellent job as Francis Crick, and really, I think, showed his joviality and his intelligence and that sense of humor and the role that he played in putting it all together. And their collaboration and their friendship, I thought, worked really well on stage. Ben Peltison played Don Casper, the American grad student, and I thought he did a lovely job, too. I thought they all did a lovely job. He did a lovely job of bringing that character's openness and an honesty and sincerity to the forefront, and made it, I think, believable that this was someone Rosalind would warm to and open up to. And finally, Dave Gelles as Gosling, I thought, brought a really nice kind of a charming PhD student quality. You know, he's sort of in some ways the comic relief in the play, and I thought he rose to that task without caricaturing Gosling, and we still saw Gosling as someone who was real and rounded and intellectual and multidimensional. So I thought they all did a great job, and I'm glad you felt that way too.
Well, again, here you have a group of scientists, very bright smart scientists about to work on one of the most momentous, not only biological, scientific discoveries of the 20th century. So with that in the background, tell us what you're trying to convey in Photograph 51. Did you intend to just simply tell a very interesting story, which it was, or is there a broader theme or message you were after?
You know, I mean, I think it's a play that's more about personality than a message. I mean, I just found her character so interesting and sort of multidimensional. You know, that this is not a black and white story. I certainly didn't intend to make a case for Rosalind's place in history. I think she is someone we should admire for many, many reasons and respect. And I did not intend to you know, take a stand in any sort of way with this play. I wanted to try to tell an entertaining story.
Now, your story took place in the 1950s, when interactions and relationships between men and women in the scientific laboratory and in the world at large were often quite different than they are in 2011. Do you think there are other Rosalind Franklins still out there today?
One of the surprising things about working on this play and having it produced has been all of the scientists who have come have met me and told me that there is still some of this imbalance in labs today, you know, that it's often harder for women to get ahead. Now, I'm sure that mirrors just the society at large. You know, I doubt it's limited to the science world, but I gather that especially in certain areas of science, there's still a pretty large imbalance, and I think there would be lively debate about this topic, and there might be sort of generational debate too. I think a lot of the people I spoke to, a lot of older women said that this sort of thing still exists in labs. And a lot of younger women said that it didn't. So I don't know, I guess, since I'm not a scientist and don't live in that environment and exist in those circles. But in the sense that I think there are women who are struggling with the question of how best to succeed, how to behave in the world, in a way that will both be true to themselves and also get them where they want to go. I mean, I think that's a question that I'm sure exists in a huge way still.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.